Science Branch Broadcast, a one-hour prophecy program on the American Voice Radio Network, featuring Pastor Dan of the Messiah's Branch Ministry. And now, here's Pastor Dan.
Welcome to Mission Watch, another Messiah's Branch National Satellite Radio program. We're broadcasting from the Flint Hills of Kansas, and we're on the American Voice Radio Network. Today's date is August 15, 2013. Mission Watch, we are warning the world as it happens. If you need help with anything after the program, give me a phone call. If you need a prayer, you can also call me. If you get the machine, please leave your name, your number, your prayer request, or your message, whatever it is. Make sure you say the number slowly. My phone number, of course, is 620-878-4682. 620-878-4682. And an emergency, my cell phone number is 316-619-4886. And folks, you can always find updates with the breaking news, our ministry, radio program archives, and our mailing address at our blog, which is simply prophecyhour.com, prophecyhour.com. Now prayer, and we'll be bringing on today's guest, and I'm so glad to be here with you for Mission Watch early in the afternoon. Well, to me it's early, 5 o'clock Central, and this way we are also live. So, now prayer, I'll bring on tonight's guest. Dear Heavenly Father, in Yeshua HaMashiach's name I pray. Father, I pray that radio tonight goes according to your will and not my will, nor my guest's will. But please give everyone out there ears in which to hear the truth. Amen and amen. Well, yesterday there was an article on Front Page Magazine that said the Muslim Brotherhood's leader's son claims the Muslim Brotherhood is blackmailing Obama with evidence that could put him in prison. We could only hope. What could this information be? As the son did not reveal, of course, what it was, we could only hope he would reveal some sort of proof Obama was not born here, or maybe just prove something about Benghazi, like gun running, or maybe something about the cover-up of the 400 rocket launchers. Well, folks, I really don't think it's any of them. But tonight, we'll bring somebody on that has a really good look at it. And so he's an investigative reporter. He's been on with me many times. If you've never heard of him before, his name's Ben Barrick. He will shed some light on all this, and we'll just ask Ben about Ben. So are you there with me, Ben?
I'm here, Pastor Dan. How are you?
Pretty good. And for the record, I didn't set you up with Frank for what he said, but, you know, it was funny. Anyway, so you heard my lead-in.
Yes.
What do you think? And I know you guys just did an article. Well, let's do this. First, tell us who you work, the folks that may never have heard you before, who it is that you work with, and so they can kind of get a picture of who you are.
Yeah, I do a lot of collaborative work with Waleed Shubat, former Muslim Brotherhood, former PLO member, who converted to Christianity in 1993. In fact, I would encourage everybody to go to shubat.com, S-H-O-E-B-A-T, .com to get all of this information. You know, we have really broken, I would say, about 5 to 6 huge bombshell stories that have gotten attention, but have not broken through the lamestream media's firewall. And even conservative media hasn't picked up on a lot of it. But you know, in light of what you're talking about, this kind of goes back to an article that we published on June 30th. And, in fact, I would encourage everybody to check out this article because we continue to add to it. It's called Ironclad, Egypt Involved in Benghazi Attacks. And when we published this originally, we published it with the premise that, look, let's see if we can establish enough probable cause to bring administration officials to trial. You know, that's what a grand jury is for. You know, you don't have to have the evidence to convict. You just have to have enough evidence for probable cause. And so we went into it with that in mind and accumulated exhibits. And as of now, we're well over Exhibit Z. I think we're in Exhibit AC. And we continue to add to it. We also have addendums, additional reports that we've added to this. And this has really kind of taken on a life of its own. You know, we just looked at a few different pieces of evidence. You know, we had an explosive piece of evidence produced by Raymond Ibrahim at Gatestone Institute. It was a one-page Libyan intelligence document from September 15th of last year. And in this document, translated into English, it says that the Libyan intelligence arrested six members of an Egyptian cell of Ansar al-Sharia for their role in the Benghazi attacks. And even these people, these terrorists that they named, identified Mohamed Morsi as being involved. And we're like, well, that's one heck of a piece of evidence. I mean, that's an official Libyan intelligence document. Then we looked at video, cell phone video taken from the scene of the Benghazi attacks as they were happening, literally a piece of video footage plucked from the fog of war. And in this footage, you can hear, in Arabic, you can hear a gunman say, "Don't shoot, don't shoot, we were sent by Dr. Morsi."
Really?
That had been a reference to the Egyptian president. So when you couple those two pieces of evidence alone, you have quite a foundation. And lo and behold, we had an email sent to us on July 10th, on or about July 10th, and we found out that there was a subcommittee hearing for the Foreign Affairs Committee. It was a joint subcommittee hearing chaired by Ted Poe, and Dana Rohrabacher, congressman from California, introduced our report into the hearing, into the congressional record, and proceeded to use his 5 minutes to ask the three expert witnesses, who are basically from Washington, D.C. based think tanks that are, you know, that are touted as experts in mm-hmm. this sort of thing. And Rohrabacher was asking them about this, you know, the stuff in our report, and they attempted to debunk it, essentially. They attempted to diminish it and to poo-poo it. Well, we then responded to this, and their testimony has actually bolstered our case, because one of the things that the lead witness there, I believe his name was David Gartenstein Ross, one of the things that he said was, when asked if there was any connection to the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt to the Benghazi attacks, he said, there's no evidence that that's true. And Ansar al-Sharia, Egypt, he says, we don't have any evidence of Ansar al-Sharia, Egypt being involved. So instead what he did was he did concede that there is an Egyptian connection to Benghazi, but he painted that connection as a ragtag group of rogue freelance jihadists that belonged to a group called the Jamal Network, which was headed by a guy named Jamal. Now, the thing here is that he basically just, with that concession, he essentially proved our point. And he also made argument. Because what he did by saying that Jamal was involved, we did some research on Jamal, and it was in an article in Pajamas Media earlier this week. We did some research into Jamal, and the Jamal network was being had Ansar al-Sharia terrorists from Egypt funneled to it. So that is a connection. The Jamal network is connected to Ansar al-Sharia. Ansar al-Sharia is headed by a guy named Marjan Salem, who mm-hmm. was also named in that Libyan intelligence document. So the truth of the matter is that if you want to go down the road of saying that it was the Jamal network that constitutes the Egyptian connection, then you have yourself a bit of a problem, because the Jamal network is connected to Ansar al-Sharia Egypt, as is Jamal himself. We did thorough research on this guy, and he is up to his neck in Ansar al-Sharia Egypt. And if you'll note, Pastor Dan, you'll notice that the Susan Rice, they had the Ansar al-Sharia reference scrubbed from her talking points. We know all this.
Right.
But what nobody seems to want to talk about is the Ansar al-Sharia Egypt connection. When you peel back the Ansar al-Sharia Egypt connection, you will find a Muslim Brotherhood Egypt connection. And when you find a Muslim Brotherhood Egypt connection to Benghazi, you find a nation state at the time perpetrating an act of war against the United States, because the Muslim Brotherhood of Egypt was in charge of that country, a.k.a. Mohammed Morsi at the time.
Okay, let me throw a couple things in here. Now, folks, you think you may have heard the best of it, so you haven't yet. So you're going to go then and explain the connection to why would Morsi send the people? You know, what's the reason behind it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we are still trying to get to the bottom of this, but there is a very interesting piece of video courtesy of CNN's Nick Robertson. CNN's Nick Robertson is a British left-wing liberal wacko who was in Cairo, did a puff piece on Mohammed al-Zawahiri. Well, who's Mohammed al-Zawahiri? That is the younger brother of the top dog at al-Qaeda, Ayman al-Zawahiri. Ayman al-Zawahiri was the number two behind bin Laden, and then won the position by default when bin Laden was killed. But Mohammed al-Zawahiri is a very prominent figure in Ansar al-Sharia, Egypt. Again, I can't stress enough, people need to focus on Ansar al-Sharia, Egypt. Because I'll get to the Mohammed al-Zawahiri in a second. Because if you notice lately, beginning back on July 31st, you had CNN come out with this big announcement that a lead suspect had been interviewed. And they jumped through all these hoops and made a big deal about this Ahmed Abu Khatala, the lead suspect in Benghazi, who was Ansar al-Sharia Libya, who was at the scene of the attack. And they made a big deal about this. And he was there, and he's a bad guy, and he's a terrorist and all that. But there are many bigger fish above him. So you had the focus taken away and placed on Ansar al-Sharia Libya by doing that. And if you remember all of the embassies that were threatened to be closed or were closed because of some specific terror threat,
wait a minute. Let me ask you about that. I've seen somebody talking about the embassies being closed and said that there was no real threat. What do you think? Was there a threat or not a threat?
It's hard to tell, but my gut tells me that based on this president's track record, I don't trust anything it does. I think that it's quite possible that this was some sort of a diversionary tactic, because when the dust settled on that whole embassy closing deal, they pointed to Ansar al-Sharia in the Arabian Peninsula, Yemen. Ansar al-Sharia, Yemen. So again, right. when the attention starts to focus on Egypt, it's like they direct all of this Ansar this attention elsewhere. So Khatala is Ansar al-Sharia Libya. The embassies were closed because of a threat from Ansar al-Sharia Yemen. And again, Ansar al-Sharia Egypt is nowhere to be seen or talked about. So I find that curious. But all that to say, on September 11th of last year, Nick Robertson was – now I ask you, where was the first attack last year on September 11th?
That was on the base. It was on the the first attack. You mean in the world?
The day.
It was on Egypt. In Egypt,
that's right.
Wasn't it? Cairo?
U.S. Embassy in Cairo.
Right,
okay?
Right.
And when you factor that in to, that's Egypt, and there is definitely an Egyptian connection to Benghazi, you have those are the two biggest attacks the two most major attacks, and both of them have an Egyptian angle to it. But on September 11th, this was shocking when this was brought to our attention. September 11th of last year, Nick Robertson interviewed Mohammed al-Zawahiri the morning of September 11th outside the U.S. Embassy in Cairo. And there were protesters there. Now, we're talking hours before the actual attack on our embassy.
Right.
And he, in addition to having Mohammed al-Zawahiri there, he was also interviewing the blind sheikh's son. And there were protesters all around the embassy. And he said, this is CNN, they said that the reason for the protesters, who had been there for months, the reason the protesters were there was to demand the release of the blind sheikh Omar Abdel Rahman. Now, Omar Abdel Rahman is the mastermind behind the first World Trade Center attack, and he is serving a life sentence here in the United States. So here we have the day of the attack last year on our embassy. CNN is reporting that protesters are in front of it, demanding the release of the blind sheikh. And the attack happens, and all of a sudden the narrative becomes it was because of a video.
Wow.
So if you take this, and CNN never aired the report, but they still have it up on their website. But if you take that as a foundation, Ansar al-Sharia, Egypt, one of its primary objectives, one of its stated primary objectives, is to release the blind sheikh.
Right.
That's what it's in business to do. In fact, the Omar Abdel Rahman brigades claimed responsibility, were found to have been behind the attack on our consulate in Benghazi on June 6th, if you remember that when that explosion blew a hole through the perimeter wall.
Right.
That was the Omar Abdel Rahman brigade. Their stated objective is to get the blind sheikh released. Well, how do you do that if you're a terrorist organization? The way you do that is by prisoner exchanges. Now, one of the things that Waleed confided in me, I mean, he knows the Middle Eastern mentality. He says to him, it makes absolutely no sense for these terrorists to descend upon this consulate and kill a high-value target in Christopher Stevens, because they know, and this is how they operate, it is, you get a high-value target, and you have a lot of leverage. And,
right.
And the thinking is that, and we've heard this bandied about for quite some time, but a retired four-star admiral, Ace Lyons, has also postulated this, that Benghazi was about a botched kidnapping operation that was intended to kidnap Christopher Stevens and exchanged him for the blind sheikh, and that it may have gone bad, may have gone south. Now, if you remember, and this is actually one of our exhibits in our original report, it's a video. It's a video excerpt from a special report program on Fox News with Brett Baer. And in this report, Brett Baer reads excerpts from a book that's going to be coming out in the coming months, I think maybe not even until 2014, from witnesses on the ground at Benghazi who say that there was no doubt that the attackers were focused on going after Stevens specifically. They were using military-style hand signals, and they were very coordinated and organized, and that there was no doubt in these witnesses' minds that Stevens was the target. So there's nothing in it for these guys to kill Stevens, you know, that we can really think of.
Right, right.
Think,
let me come in a minute. I'll give you a breath a second. In the second half, there's some things I want to ask about Hillary and Huma and some other things, some ideas that you might be able to lay to rest. But for the folks out there, folks, he's absolutely right. You know, Muslims, a high-value target like this, they would have kidnapped him, even if they weren't going to try and trade him for the blind sheikh. If they could have got their hands on him, they could have demanded all kinds of things, whether it was weapons, money, so on and so forth, because isn't that what they do over and over and over, Ben, it seems like?
Yeah. Well, and if you remember the son of Ray LaHood, remember the transportation secretary, I forget his son's name, but I know his last name is LaHood.
Right.
Yeah, he was, if you remember last year, he was one of several members of an NGO that was detained in Egypt and was going to be charged and ultimately was released. And I think that he was convicted in absentia to a 5-year prison sentence, and that was more symbolic to appease the masses than anything else. But right. There was a lot of anger from the Muslim Brotherhood contingent, from Morsi's supporters and followers, that these guys were allowed to be released without demanding the release of the blind sheikh.
Right.
This was April of last year. So we're talking about April, May, June, July, August, September, you know, 5 or so months before the Benghazi attack. Now, these are facts, and I don't want to lead people to believe that we're drawing these conclusions, but we are stating facts about these desires. Mohamed Morsi himself demanded the release, called for the release of the blind sheikh after he was sworn in as president. So,
right, and wasn't that his running platform?
Yes. So, but you know, my thing is, you know, if you equate it to the politicians over here who you know promise everything and throw red meat during the campaign, and then back off after they get sworn in, you know, to become more pragmatic and you know more populist and what you
right,
whatever.
Right.
In this case. You know, Morsi demanded the blind sheikh's release after being sworn in, and then demanded his release after the Benghazi attacks. Now, the thing about Morsi is that this Jamal character that I was talking about earlier,
Let's hold that. We got less than a minute before halftime break. And folks, no, they are presenting evidence, and I might do a little speculation after break, and we'll have Ben chop it up or agree with it, but we are going to go for a break. You can find Ben at Barrack Now, that's Barrack Now .blogspot.com, or tell him that's what, tell him the other one.
It's Shoebot, S-H-O-E-B-A-T.
Shoebot, yeah, Shoebot.com. And you can find links to both of these at my website, and we'll get him to be quiet here for a minute because we will be back, folks, in about roughly 3 minutes. And don't forget the 2 minute seven.
Pastor Dan will be right back. American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices. Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family. Americans for Immigration Control is a leading national organization dedicated to reasonable levels of legal immigration and effective enforcement to stop illegal immigration. With more than 250,000 members and supporters nationwide, we are an effective voice for immigration reform. AIC stands up in Washington for the views of most Americans on immigration. We are the leaders in stopping recent legislation to reward 10 million or more illegal aliens with legal status and eventual citizenship. The late Georgia Congressman Charlie Norwood had this to say about us. AIC has earned a reputation among members of Congress as one of the most active and responsive advocacy groups in the field of immigration. Join AIC today. For more information, go to our website, immigrationcontrol.com. That's immigrationcontrol.com or call 540-468-2023. That's 540-468-2023.
Food prices going up. Homes being foreclosed, unemployment insurance running out, jobs leaving the country. Many people cannot afford to eat or keep a roof over their head. Too many can do neither. Messiah's Branch has a mission church in Wichita, Kansas that helps the victims of this banker's economy, the American people, your neighbors. The mission is the last hope for so many Americans. We need your help to lift up the poorest of the poor. These are men, women, and children who once had homes, now in the street. They all need what you need. First aid, beds, food, clothing, and so on. You can send a monetary gift or a box of necessities to 230 West 4th Street, Florence, Kansas, 66851. Or donate online by going to WichitaHomeless.com or simply call 316-619-4886. 316-619-4886.
This is Pastor Dan Catlin, and you're listening to Mission Watch on the American Voice Radio Network. Folks, please remember to pray tonight about a donation for our work with the homeless and poor from our mission church in Wichita, Kansas. Support us so we can care for the people that the Father sends us. You know, folks, we really get no help from any organized churches or government agencies. It's only folks like you that have supported us for the last 13 years, and now we are in our 14th year, that make this mission church work. And folks, but right now we're trying to get the Mercy Woman's Overflow Shelter open, and I was talking it over with my wife and some others at the church, and it's like this: we need 10 monthly sponsors of $100 a month. So pray about it. That's just $1,000 to be able to run this overflow, so that we can bring in 18 women or more off the street each night and give them a bed every night. Just merely $1,000 a month. And so we figure if we could get 10 monthly sponsors of $100 each, then we can open the doors. And you can do all this by mailing a check or money order or do it at our website, massagebranch.org. You can find a place there that says donate, and you can donate by PayPal, and it'll take the same donation, you know, every month. You can do it automatically. Anyway, if you're doing any of this or you're interested, please let me know so I can count on it. Remember, we need 10 people at $100 a month. Yeah, you can put a pledge a lower donation, but let me know, because we really want to get the mission church open, and we need at least $1,000 a month to make sure we can pay the lights, gas, water, electric. Nobody's getting a wage for this. Nobody's making any money on it. We're just trying to get these women in off the street. But why do so many people come to us for help? Well, love is the first answer, and treated as family is the second. And beyond that, We have no set guidelines like programs. They just walk in the door and ask us. That's the rule. Then if we do not have the way to fill the need, we pray it in. This is why agencies tell all their employees about the Father's Little Mission Church. And you see, when guidelines stop them from helping, they send them to us. People who have millions of dollars in their budget send people to a place that really has no budget. We are the very last hope for so many. And folks, we are responsible to care one for another, as we are our brother's keepers. All donations, no matter what size, does help. And you know, your Father does notice all donations that come from your heart. You can donate online or by mailing a check or money order, and you can find all this information at prophecyhour.com, prophecyhour.com, or call me at 620-878-4682. And now let's get back here with Ben Barrick, and we're talking about Benghazi and some really strange things going on with that. You still with me, Ben?
I am.
Okay. Let me. I'll say about three things here together, and then you can kind of sort it out. One question I had come in, you know, is it, and these are speculation type things, so you don't even really have to answer or go there, but, you know, do you think that maybe the night of Benghazi, do you think Hillary's decisions could have been influenced by Huma Abedin, or because of the involvement with the Muslim Brotherhood? And the Muslim Brotherhood, do you think that we've been, you know, this administration really being in, I guess, what would you say, cahoots with them all along? Because it sure looks that way.
The answer to the first question is yes. I do believe that. Because it's not just about the Benghazi. It's about the entire Obama administration policy in the Middle East. Up, down, left, right, front, back, sideways, Huma Abedin, if she is a Muslim Brotherhood operative, and let me tell you, evidence suggests overwhelmingly that she is. And in fact, to put it in context of what I was talking about earlier, probable cause. There is sufficient and overwhelming probable cause to indict her if this was a trial, if this was a case. If you're gathering up enough evidence, a grand jury, a grand jury's job is to determine if there's enough evidence to indict. And if you look at this whole thing through that lens, you have to say there is enough evidence to indict Huma Abedin. And I'm not saying that this is worthy of crime. I'm equating the two
right.
Tracks here. You have the legal track, and you have wanting to get to the truth here. And the legal track says that if you want to indict somebody, you have to get a grand jury, and they have to determine if there's enough probable cause to indict the person. Well, in this particular case, yes, there's overwhelming just cause, probable cause to indict Huma Abedin as a, and I'm saying this figuratively, as a Muslim Brotherhood plant operative in the United States. So to answer your question, yes, I do believe that Huma Abedin likely influenced Hillary Clinton, but it wasn't just Benghazi. It was in the overthrow of Gaddafi. It was in the overthrow of Hosni Mubarak. It was in the overthrow of Tunisian Ben Ali. It's in the Syrian policy. All of it across the board. Everything that this administration has done has been pro-Muslim Brotherhood first, everything else second or last. So, yes, I answer that first question that way. The second part of this, of your question, is I think had to do with Muslim Brotherhood influence in general on this administration.
Right.
It's indisputable that this administration has been infiltrated by Muslim Brotherhood apparatchiks. I challenge anybody to dispute that. We have been infiltrated at every level. I'll give you an example. John McCain, my friends, you do not have to be scared of Barack Obama's president. John McCain has a friend of his named Muaz Mustafa. Muaz Mustafa is a lobbyist for the Syrian rebels. Okay, he has an office one block away from the White House. And if you remember a few months ago, there was a bit of an uproar, a controversy, because John McCain had been photographed in Syria standing next to a kidnapper. You remember that?
Yeah,
photo?
Absolutely.
But what people don't necessarily know is that it's a photo of McCain, with McCain in the middle, the kidnapper on one side, and there's another guy on the other side of McCain. It reminds me of that song by Steeler's Wheel. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right, here I am stuck in the middle with you. But so you have one side, you have the kidnapper. On the other side, guess who that other guy is? That's Muaz Mustafa. So Muaz Mustafa, Mr. One Block Away from the White House, takes McCain over there to Syria and poses with a kidnapper. I mean, this is the answer.
Insane.
To what happened.
Hey, let me gripe for a minute. This is insane. That's insanity. What we're seeing with this administration and the people they have as advisors in the White House and to Hillary and all this, you know, 20 years ago or maybe even 10 years ago before Obama, they wouldn't even have got on the premises without a security check, but yet we have a president in office who hasn't even ever showed his driver's license, I don't think. What, I mean, how did we get to this place that they all got there?
I know exactly how we got to this place. And unfortunately, it needs to be placed at the foot of the feet of George W. Bush. And I'm not one of these left wing, you know, blame Bush for everything conspiracy theorists and these people that are just defending. I'm quite the opposite. In fact, what I say is that had after 9/11, had George W. Bush's administration, and you and I have talked about this before, but had George W. Bush and his administration, and that includes Karl Rove, and I wouldn't dismiss the possibility that Karl Rove is so ubiquitous these days and simply will not go away. Humpty Dumpty sat on Karl Rove's shoulders. He will not go away because, I mean, he's writing op-eds in the Wall Street Journal. His mug is always on Fox News. He's leading these PACs. He wants Rhino establishment Republicans elected. I believe, and this is just something that I think I have enough, I've read enough to believe this. The fact is that after 9/11, the George W. Bush administration had 90% approval with the American. It could have done whatever it wanted to. It could have decided to identify the enemies of the United States. Externally, Saudi Arabia, that's where all this stuff comes from. It could have identified the enemy globally as the Muslim Brotherhood. It could have identified the enemy domestically as all of the Muslim Brotherhood groups in America. It didn't do that. What it did is it said Al-Qaeda and terror are our enemies. And we have been on a very dangerous track ever since that time. And that is what has allowed the likes of John McCain to take money from Muaz Mustafa. That is what has allowed, I believe, Barack Obama to rise in prominence in American politics. Because had we declared war on Muslim Brotherhood, I mean, my goodness, all you would have had to have done in the first decade of the 21st century, all you'd had to have done is look at Barack Obama's connections to all of these individuals. And there's no way he'd quit the White House. We were set on the wrong course after 9/11, my friend, big time. That, I believe, is why we are where we are. John McCain never would come near Muaz. And look at what they're doing. This really hacked me off. Lindsey Graham and John McCain go to Egypt last week to call for, what did they call for? They called for the release of Muslim Brotherhood leaders from jail.
Yeah.
What did we talk about in the first segment of your show? The likelihood, probable cause, that Muslim Brotherhood Egypt was involved in Benghazi. Here you have two sitting U.S. doofus senators going over to Egypt. And not only that, here's something for you. This tells you the duplicity of Lindsey Graham. On the week of July 31st, somewhere in that time, he, along with seven other Republican congressional congressmen, sent a letter to the incoming FBI director, James Comey, demanding answers on Benghazi. Okay? Lindsey Graham signed that letter, demanding answers in Benghazi. A week later, this doofus goes over to Egypt and demands the release of Muslim Brotherhood prisoners, leaders, that are quite likely involved in Benghazi. Is that schizophrenia? Or is that self-preservation trying to play both sides of the fence? You know, there's one thing that I touched on earlier, and I think we went to commercial, that I wanted to make sure I hit on. There's a guy named the head of the Jamal Network, which is Muhammad Jamal al-Kashif, which I talked about earlier, the experts will concede was involved, you know, potentially in Benghazi and as a suspect. His partner is a guy named Tariq Abu al-Azam. Al-Azam is the guy who we believe was responsible, was actually at the scene during the June 6th attack on our consulate in Benghazi that blew a hole in that wall. But what's more disturbing about al-Azam is that he was a major in the Egyptian Air Force. He came over to the United States and trained in the U.S. Air Force and became, after that training, a captain in the Egyptian Air Force. But you don't hear this. This guy's name is nowhere to be found in American media, in Western media, because that would be such an embarrassment to the United States. This guy was, I mean, I talked to you earlier about military-style hand signals and highly coordinated. Benghazi, well, al-Azam would know all this stuff, and he is involved with the Jamal Network. The Jamal Network is who, you know, these experts will defer to as being involved in Benghazi. So al-Azam, there's reason to believe that al-Azam was involved in the Benghazi attack. But what's worse than all of that, Pastor Dan, is that al-Azam and Jamal were released from jail shortly after Hosni Mubarak was ousted in 2011. They then go on their terrorism quest, and, you know, ultimately Benghazi happens. Both of them were arrested about a month later and then released. Jamal was given a presidential pardon from Morsi. So, you know, it doesn't take much to connect dots here. I mean, we're looking at factual pieces of evidence here that's indisputable, that implicates Mohamed Morsi to some degree in what happened at Benghazi. Why would the president of Egypt at the time release prisoners who are implicated in the Benghazi attacks? And then on top of that, why would Lindsey Graham and John McCain go over there last week and demand the release of these leaders of this group? It's literally insane. And there's something else that came out yesterday or the day before. You had mentioned it, the front page magazine article. The son of Khairat al-Shatir. Khairat al-Shatir is a Muslim brother. He's the number two leader in Muslim Brotherhood Egypt. He's a deputy behind a guy named Mohammed Badi.
Right.
And al-Shatir was, if you remember this, he was the leading Muslim Brotherhood candidate for president before Morsi. But you remember that?
Yes,
al-Shatir was disqualified because, guess what? He'd been in jail too many times. Well, he's now in jail again, and his son, a guy named Saad al-Shatir, allegedly gave an interview to a Turkish news agency not too long ago and said that his father, Khairat al-Shatir, has the goods on Obama and that he's got recordings, documents, evidence, this, that, bada bing, bada boom, that will essentially enough to put Obama in prison. Now, I don't know how much of that's true. I tend to look with a crooked eyebrow at terrorists when they speak. I don't know that I can everything they say, but it didn't take long, because then a couple of days later, you had a very credible Egyptian talk show host named Ahmed Musa, who went on his TV show and for 3 minutes berated Ann Patterson, the U.S. ambassador to Egypt, on his show. And he did so very confidently, which is why we tend to believe what he's saying, and said that the passport of Christopher Stevens' assassin, and he attributed it to a name that we hadn't heard before, which, you know, that may or may not complicate things, but he said the passport of the, quote, assassin of Christopher Stevens was found in the home of Qairat al-Shatir. Now, if Qairat al-Shatir is the number two Muslim Brotherhood dude in Egypt, and he's got the passport of the guy that was behind Benghazi, or a central figure in Benghazi, that automatically would seemingly connect the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt to Benghazi. And so, from everything we've seen, we trust the source. We trust this Egyptian talk shows. Several reputable Arabic sources referred to that, so they trusted the source. So, when you look, his son Saad al-Shatir said in his interview with the Turk Anatolian news agency that the United States administration, Obama administration, fears his father more than they fear Morsi. Well, when you take that statement that he made, and you couple it with what was revealed about the passport, that creates a sensible linkage. I mean, that one seems to back up the other. And so, you know, so al-Shatir is the guy that Lindsey Graham and John McCain went over there to. He was one of the guys that they tried to get released. But the Deputy Secretary of State, the number two at the State Department, right behind John Kerry, was over in Egypt last week meeting with al-Shatir personally and met with him for 90 minutes. Now, the information for public consumption as to why he was doing that was to help to negotiate a peace between Brotherhood and the current Egyptian government, and to find a role for the Brotherhood and the new government. Well, whatever. But I think it may have been a little bit something a little bit different. You know, if al-Shatir has these goods on the Obama administration. So if Bill Burns is his name, was tasked with talking to al-Shatir, and then he comes home and by all accounts the envoy to Egypt was a disaster. McCain, Graham, and Burns were an unmitigated disaster. I mean, the three walking gas cans every time they spoke, the gasoline on the fire over there. You know, if that's true, here we go. You know, you have a few days later, you have this information about passport. Is there more information to come out about what happened at Benghazi? I would not be surprised. I think there's some things that are about to unravel because these Muslim Brotherhood leaders that are currently in jail in Egypt are due to go to trial on August 25th, a very key date, and much could be released at that time.
That's only 10 days away. A couple of other things, folks. We also got to remember that the Obama administration is still trying to hide the Benghazi survivors by giving them different names and moving them in different places around the country. I mean, this whole thing stinks, man. It stinks so bad that I can't believe how blind the public is. But I guess the public's only as blind as the news media wants them. What do you think about that?
Yeah, the news media has just been, I mean, they're criminal. It's borderline criminal what they're doing. The founders of this country, I believe, thought that there was and I think they were mostly right, but believed that there was an adversarial press was almost a natural reality. And, you know, part of that everybody that's in the press. It wants to be an adversary to the government, especially when you create a document, the Constitution, which says that they have the right to do so. So, and it's a tricky thing. I mean, I don't know how you tell, on one hand, you tell the press that they've got the freedom to investigate, and they've got all these, you know, all of these liberties when it comes to investigating, and then turn around and say, but if they don't do their job, then, you know, they're on the hook. So it's a very tricky, tricky thing. And I think what we have learned is that the adversarial nature of a press isn't as natural, you know, as like water running downhill, isn't as natural as like that. It's more susceptible, and I think it's blatantly obvious that the press in the United States, Western media, has been corrupted, thoroughly corrupted.
Absolutely. Absolutely. If it wasn't for talk radio, like, you know, what we do and the Internet, it would be a complete blinding. But, you know, the normal citizen that just, you know, works hard, comes home, might catch a little bit of the news, you know, they are blind. Well, Ben, give us some contact information, and we'll have you back on again. And really, folks, if you go back through our archives and see all these programs that Ben and I did and the ones with Walid that, you know, these things were exposed in, a long time ago before the media ever hit it. By the way, what's that real good book you wrote?
Oh, I've written two. I've written one called Unsung Davids, 10 Men Who Battled Goliath Without Glory. And I co-wrote the latest one with Walid called The Case for Islamophobia.
Okay. Well, all right. Give us Walid's place or whichever one you want to, and then I'm going to have to say goodbye to you.
Yeah, I would suggest just direct everybody to shubat.com, and especially, you know, we are on the cutting edge of a lot of stories thanks to his expertise in Arabic media, because he doesn't just surf Arabic websites. He finds the right ones, and he finds the right information that's on them. And he connects a lot of dots. And, you know, we're doing some good work out there thanks to Walid.
All right. Well, you be blessed, and I'll get Walid back on someday. I'll get you to get him on for me. But we got to go, so we'll see you later, Ben. Thanks for being on with me.
All right. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye. Folks, powerful information. Let me tell you what. You can go to Walid, you know, shubat.com, or you can go to barracknow.blogspot.com and listen to Ben. Is also has his own radio program that he does. I think it's once a day, something like that. But you can find his information over there at shubat.com. That's a good place to go. These cutting-edge things, I haven't seen anything fall to the ground that they've said yet. And this thing about Huma Abedin, Ben warned about her over a year ago, probably 2 years ago. It's been a while. We started talking about her, a spy in the White House, I think we called that program. But anyway, remember, folks, support the poor. We'll be back on the air at 7 p.m. Central with what? Prophecy Hour. That's what we'll be doing, and we got a really good program for you tonight called Babylon Rising. With Rob Skipka, I think that's how you pronounce his name, but a real good program. But folks, remember, we must remember there's only one God, and that's the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. His son is Yeshua HaMashiach. He gave his life for our repentant sins. He rose after 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth, and only through him is the way to the Father. Remember to love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your mind, and all your soul. Then love your neighbor as yourself. Always, always, always be a blessing to others. Lord our God, Father, King, Universe, ask in Yeshua HaMashiach's name that the Father blesses and keeps you, and His face shines upon you, and is gracious to you, and gives you peace. Until, well, 7 o'clock, this is Pastor Dan saying goodbye and shalom.
You've just heard the Messiah's Branch broadcast featuring Pastor Dan. To contact Dan on the Internet, go to messiahsbranch.org. To write to Dan, send a note to Messiah's Branch, 230 West 4th Street, Florence, Kansas, 66851. Tune in next time from Messiah's Branch.